Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Dawn Hucklebritt. She's a policy director with Young Elected Officials Action, a program of the group People for the American Way. And we're inviting Dawn here tonight to talk about the coordinated attacks across many states in the country against women's reproductive rights. And Dawn, thanks so much for making time to be on our program tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I thought, first of all, you could say a bit about your organization, which the acronym YEO, part of the larger group People for the American Way.
Exactly. So I am the policy director for the Young Elected Officials Action Network, YEO, as you said, a program of People for the American Way representing the interests of progressive young electeds across the country. And People for the American Way are the overall sponsor organization is a national nonprofit advocacy organization dedicated to equality, freedom, and progressive values.
Thanks for that. And I thought to talk about this issue, which we've touched on in previous programs, we could just get an update, or an overview, I should say, of the over 300 bills that have been introduced at both the state and some at the federal level, too, that would restrict women's access to abortion, birth control, denying critical medical services related to reproductive health, and even cancer screening. It's just been an avalanche of bills introduced by mostly Republican-led legislatures and signed into law by Republican governors across the states. Maybe you could summarize for us sort of what's been happening out there to grasp state by state what's going on.
Sure. Well, to start, I'll just say that I am heartened by some of our young elected officials and some of the positive work that they have done in this very, grim sort of landscape to advance positive legislation such as comprehensive sex ed, pushing back on crisis pregnancy centers, I should say so-called crisis pregnancy centers. But they face a real uphill battle. There are very few pro-choice legislatures in the country right now. And last week, People for the American Way released the report, Chipping Away at Choice, Five Growing Threats to Women's Healthcare Access and Autonomy. And this report tracks both the really blatantly extreme attacks on choice and also a really dangerous parallel effort to chip away at women's rights, often in very strategic and deceptive ways. And we go over five different categories of these attacks, and I can just sort of summarize them for you. The first of which I'm sure you've heard is TRAP, the Targeted Regulation of Abortion Providers. This is imposing costly and largely unnecessary new regulations on clinics that provide abortions, everything from major remodeling to regulating the number of parking spaces, even the size of janitorial closets. And these regulations on the surface may look harmless, may even be said to sort of protect women's health and look out for their best interest, but in reality they have been stated to, the intention is to shut down clinics and to restrict access. We also looked at crisis pregnancy centers, which have been found to provide women with false or misleading information. They're often not even staffed by medical professionals, and they're really to dissuade women from getting abortions, even though often they're touted as a place to provide resources for women in need. We also looked at mandatory waiting periods. More than 25 states currently have these, which is a mandatory waiting period between the time of consultation with a physician and the procurement of an abortion. In South Dakota, this can be up to 72 hours. And again, this may seem kind of, reasonable, the idea of a waiting period, but in reality, when you think about the individual situation that a woman may be in, she may be in a rural area. 87% of U.S. counties don't have clinics with abortions provided, so a woman may have to be traveling long distances. She may need childcare. She, it's a financial obstacle. So this is really just putting up another hurdle, another obstacle to access. We also looked at just interference with medical providers. Things like the mandatory pre-abortion ultrasounds, putting scripts into doctors' hands to give false or disputed medical information, such as the idea of fetal pain, which has been heavily disputed, or really just requiring them to give information like totally disproven connections between abortions and breast cancer. And then finally, we looked at race and sex-selective abortion bans. Which are really just cynical ploys. This has not been found to be a problem in the United States, and they just risk placing additional burdens on women of color and contribute to racial profiling.
So that's it's quite a lot of bills that have been introduced, debated, and many passed by these Republican-dominated legislatures around the country. And what is it that your organization, People for the American Way, is suggesting activists can do to resist some of these initiatives that, in the end, take women's rights away and control over their own bodies?
Sure. Well, I think overall, People for the American Way is really trying to put out information about this legislation, trying to dispel some of the misinformation, trying to provide women with medically accurate information, trying to inform our activists, trying to inform voters. We saw recently in Virginia there was a poll that abortion and choice was the number one issue that motivated women voters to go to the polls. So we know that this is an important issue to voters. I think within the YU Action Capacity, we're just trying to support and educate our legislators, our young electeds, to make sure that they have the resources and the information available to be strong advocates and champions on these issues.
Now, I wanted to just bring up a hero of the movement to really resist these restrictive measures passed in many states, and that was Texas State Senator Wendy Davis, who conducted a very long, many multi-hour filibuster, which delayed but did not prevent the eventual passage of anti-abortion legislation in the Texas State Legislature. Maybe you can speak to how important Wendy Davis and her voice of resistance was, not just to people in Texas, but to people who are resisting around the country.
Absolutely. She has been a real champion, and I think what was so fantastic about Senator Davis, a lot of commentators have said that she awoke the sleeping giant. So while there has been a sort of organized grassroots movement behind her, I think she really brought national awareness to how damaging and how dangerous these bills are. And I think she had the support of a number of groups in Texas, some of our partners, Advocates for Youth, NARAL, Planned Parenthood. I know Annie's List was involved as well. And I think it's been great that this is, she kind of helped invigorate and revitalize this movement that I'm hopeful is going to continue and grow, and sort of the information is going to continue to trickle down throughout the states.
I wonder, Dawn, if you could also speak to, and you mentioned it earlier, which is many of these states' initiatives to ban abortions after 20 weeks. And it is connected in some ways, if I'm correct, with the theory of fetal pain. Can you speak to what the rationalization is for these 20-week ban laws, as well as the details from your perspective of what this whole issue of fetal pain is?
Yes, you're right that there have been a number of successful 20-week abortion bans around this idea, this disputed idea of fetal pain. I think there have been some mixed studies, but I think it's been heavily disproven within the medical community. And, I think that it's gained some traction because it seems, fairly reasonable, I think, to a lot of people. It seems fairly far along in the process. But what isn't talked about as frequently is that this is less than 2% of abortions. This is, I think, 1.4 or 1.5% of abortions. And they often take place in cases of really rare health issues. So, threats to the health of the mother, fetal abnormalities, these are rarely unwanted pregnancies. They're usually severe, health threats and problems. So I think it's unfortunate, looking at this federal bill that senators are trying to advance, I don't think it's so much addressing a real need as using a wedge issue to try to advance some senators' national profile. And I think it's using women's health and autonomy, to build some individual politicians' own conservative credentials. And as I said, I think that if in public polling, so much of the result is based around the wording and how the narrative is told. And I think if we told the real story of crises and situations at this 20-week point, I think that we'd find that the polling is not where it's been reported recently.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to get into public opinion, but you brought up the proposal in the Senate to enforce a 20-week ban nationally at the federal level. Maybe you can talk about that proposal in a bit more detail and its prospects in the Senate, which has got a majority of Democrats right now.
Yeah, I think the Senate, I think it has a very unlikely chance of being passed in the Senate, and I think the White House has also said that it would veto it. But it would still be a coup for, I think, the right and for the anti-choice movement to get this to a vote in the Senate. But I think, again, what's really disturbing about it is that it's not addressing a real need. It's not addressing a real crisis. It's actually just about, I think, you know, politics. And I think public opinion, as I said, is not where I think recent reports have said. So much of it depends on the wording, and the advantage goes to the side that is better at defining the issue. And I think if the real story is told about what happens at 20 weeks and some of this information is cleared up and clarified about fetal pain, I think that we would find different results in the public.
Well, maybe do lay out for us what we know about public opinion on these issues. I know it probably varies from state to state or region to region. But what do you think are inaccurate about those polls, or what the polls are initially, I guess, would be the place to start.
Yeah, well, I think there's been some press recently that there, and I think part of the motivation behind the federal ban is that there's been some press around, higher numbers of support among the public for this 20-week ban. But I think, again, that it so much depends on how the issue is presented, how the story is told, the specific words that are actually used in the survey. And also, I think there's been a lot of misinformation, as we talked about earlier. I think that a lot of disputed and medically inaccurate information has been circulated among the public and is actually written into law. And that's a really disturbing part of the trend that we're seeing, is the strategic use of false information and what many are calling junk science, including different concepts of fetal pain. And if you look at the numbers, I think only 7% of the public are against abortion in all cases. So I think public opinion is nowhere near the extremes that states are legislating.
Now, some of the people who come out for the 20-week ban in these public opinion polls, are they opposed to abortion entirely, or have they just been convinced by some of these arguments regarding fetal pain and other things that you and many others challenge as being junk science? Is it just, sort of a popular myth that people are being attracted to, or is there a change of opinion nationally towards maintaining the legalization of abortion?
I think, when we tell women's individual stories, when we use sort of medically accurate information and we talk about the realities of individual situations, I think that there is still a pro-choice majority. I think, voters do also recognize and citizens recognize that this isn't a black and white issue. And I think so much of it depends on who's telling the story and who we're humanizing and what information is included.
Thanks for that. And we're speaking tonight with Dawn Hucklebridge. She's policy director with Young Elected Officials Action, YEO is for short, a program of the group People for the American Way. And we're talking about reproductive rights state by state and nationally under threat by the anti-choice groups around the country. And Dawn, I wanted to ask you about a federal judge who intervened and issued an injunction recently against parts of a new Wisconsin law that requires abortion providers to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. And that, of course, is a component of many of these anti-abortion measures in various states. What's the significance of this judge's intervention here in injunction, and could that be applied to other state laws?
I think there have been a few cases where the courts have and judges have intervened, and I think part of this overall picture is as more courts get involved, I think it's actually part of a strategic challenge, and it's going to be building towards, I hope not, but it may be building towards a challenge of Roe v. Wade. But I think, judges have recognized that this is putting an undue burden on women, that it's in violation of constitutional rights. And I think that, as I said earlier, that we're really legislating some extreme measures based on misinformation and violating basic rights.
And Dawn, when you look at public opinion, and there's a lot of anomalies and various spins that you can find in various polls. But I wanted to ask you, how important are reproductive rights going to be in the coming congressional midterm elections in 2014? Is this going to be one of the dominating issues that will define the results of that election, you think?
You know, that's a good question. And I think, you know, it remains to be seen a bit. We do see that there's some rising momentum on both sides. You know, we've seen this in Texas with Senator Davis. We've seen, you know, the discussion around what's going to happen in the Senate after the recess. We also see it, you know, just in just the very coordinated and strategic challenge in the states to reproductive rights. And, you know, these aren't isolated. These are coordinated, increasing, and really building to a strategic challenge of Roe v. Wade. And we need progressive elected leaders and activists and voters to stay vigilant. But I do think it's an important issue to voters. We saw that in 2012. I think it remains to be seen how critical it's going to be in the midterms. But I think, you know, as I said, this poll in Virginia already indicated that it's critically important. And to women voters in particular, it was the most important. So I think that it will.
Well, let's talk about Virginia for a moment, because that's a fascinating case study. Maybe you could tell our listeners about the Republican gubernatorial candidate, Ken Cuccinelli, who I believe is the current Attorney General of the state of Virginia. And he's got some pretty extreme views on abortion and a lot of other social issues. He's really certainly a darling of the extreme right and the religious right. But maybe you can speak to what we know about Ken Cuccinelli and how much of a test this will be in Virginia when he runs for governor against the Democratic candidate McAuliffe, who was previously, I believe, with the Clinton administration.
Yes. I mean, I think that Cuccinelli in many ways has proven to be way more conservative and extreme than I think Virginia voters are prepared for. And I think, as I said, I think that the poll recently showed that this is going to be abortion and reproductive rights is going to be an issue that voters are really paying attention to. And I think that's going to be a real challenge.
And will, because it may be a test case in terms of the policies that are being advocated in the campaign, you think it will draw a lot of activists to you know, be knocking on doors and making phone calls in that state in particular?
I certainly hope so. I know that there are some strong you know, advocate groups that we have in Virginia. I know that we have some partners there, and I'm hopeful that there will be a strong activist movement that's going to build on this movement that I think was revitalized in Texas, and I hope that it will continue.
And, Dawn, I did want to get back to what you mentioned a moment ago, and that has to do with the Supreme Court and the possibility that they may be handed a case challenging Roe versus Wade. And with a conservative majority on that high court, there are certainly some concern that the chipping away at Roe versus Wade over the years by the Supreme Court, could turn into something more substantial. Maybe you could just tell us kind of your overview of what's at stake with the Supreme Court these days, and what's safe, what's not safe here in terms of the rights women have gained over recent decades.
There's a lot at stake. I think that's all something that we're all aware of and all concerned about. I'm also hopeful that, you know, it hasn't. There have been efforts in recent months to bring this up to that level, and it hasn't, you know, the Supreme Court hasn't taken the bite. You know, but I do think it's something we're concerned about, and I think that it's really worrisome, actually, that, you know, Republicans are reversing their own sort of ideology around the powers of the federal government and regulation and the Commerce Clause. And I don't think that, you know, necessarily this is something that should go to that level, because it is about privacy and it is about, you know, the relationship between a woman and her doctor.
Well, Dawn, before we conclude, I just wanted to ask you what activists, women in particular, defending reproductive rights can do in safe states, because there are certainly not every state has this gauntlet of anti-abortion laws being proposed and ratified by their legislatures. Some states like New York, you know, are seeing some modicum of laws being passed in the other direction, providing more access to reproductive rights for women. So maybe you could speak to people here in Connecticut and some of the other adjacent New England states, or they may be listening, and what role they can play, you know, if not in their own backyard, then maybe across the country in some of these other states where there is a raging battle over these rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important for progressives to be both defensive and offensive. You know, I think we need to be aware of what's happening, you know, what the threats are in our community, whether it be these crisis pregnancy centers or, you know, this trend towards providing misinformation to constituents. I also think it's really important to think about this really holistically, and this is not just a matter of abortion, but it's about women's healthcare access and making sure that we have access for all women, you know, affordable and safe access to all kinds of healthcare and reproductive care. And I also think it's important to continue some of the good work that we have seen. As I mentioned, some of our young electeds have really been spearheading the movement behind things like comprehensive sexual education. And, you know, I think in both Colorado and Illinois, we had young electeds who were sponsors of those efforts. So I would just say to continue that good work, to continue to be aware of what's happening, and to continue both the offensive and the defensive.
All right. Well, Dawn, before we say goodnight, do leave our listeners with a website for People for the American Way and your YEO organization. If there's a separate site or a connection there, you can let us know about that as well.
Sure. Thank you. So People for the American Way is pfaw.org, and the YEO network is yeonetwork.org. Thank you so much.
Is that yeonetwork.org?
Exactly, yes. YEO, standing for Young Elected Officials.
Got it. Okay. Dawn, appreciate the time tonight, and good luck with your ongoing efforts there at YEO and People for the American Way. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Good night. That's Dawn Hucklebridge, Policy Director with Young Elected Officials Action, a program, again, of People for the American Way.